Welcome to this episode of the Super Yacht Laundry podcast, renewed and refreshed. I have a lovely lady as a guest this time. We've known each other. I don't even want to talk about it. Two and another third potential child on the way type kind of time. Maybe 5 years.
I would say
nearly 5 years. So yeah, we're pretty old ladies by now. Corinne, the crew coach, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time coming. We've actually attempted this podcast in different international locations, London, Australia, and God knows where else, but we finally made it.
I think obviously it's the nature of it because we're all scattered everywhere, but I was just like, yeah, I could just take podcast equipment wherever I want and I can record wherever I want. And yeah, it's not that easy. And loads and loads of things can go wrong. But happy days, I press record today, which is also something that's been happening, you know, perimenopausal forgetfulness. Love that. But yeah, so we've known each other for a while, and that's mainly due to crew well-being sphere. You know, I think we're both very like-minded in, you know, a lot of the things that we see out there and what we'd like to change. But before we get into what we do now, where was Corinne? Like, what was your upbringing before you actually got onto super yachts? Like, you know, what happened?
What was I doing before super yachts?
What were you doing? What was the young, independent, carefree Corinne doing?
I'd love to go back to that time just for a day. I was in Sydney and I was working for a very wealthy family. They lived on the same street as Nicole Kidman. And taking care of their two kids, one with special needs, and the younger one, very hyperactive. So I thought I was going to go into child psychology, and I was fascinated on how I could specialize in that area, working with children with autism.
Yeah.
And just jumping a decade ahead, after yachting, I still had that mission to work with children. But after working in a prison, I realized, not for me. No, I'm not going to work with children, purely for the fact that I care too much about children and I would be up all night worrying about their welfare. So it would not serve me to be a child psychologist.
But then you've got your own children to worry about now. So you kind of filled that void anyway.
True.
But
in a different capacity.
Like in a clinical setting, you know, I think, especially when you care so deeply, you'd kind of want to be there all the time and in control. And they're not, do you know what I mean? Like it's, and they're also not your children. So then you could get frustration. Working in a clinical setting, you saw the limitations of what you could actually achieve with children.
What do you mean by limitations working with children?
Like I said, when it's your own children, you would stop at nothing to fix them. And then, like I said, if you care really much so much about children, you can only go so far because obviously, you know, ultimately parents are meant to be, you know, looking after them.
And also the environment. And this was my struggle in the prison system, and that's why I went back into yachting, because I was offering all the tools. We had psychological support for the inmates. We're focused on rehabilitation. However, there was not enough funding for education, and so they didn't have the skills, the literacy to go seek employment. And so it was a revolving door, and I thought, what am I doing? I felt like my impact was so small. That just shows the power of a collective community, which is what we have here today with your company, my company, and all those other wonderful people you've interviewed. We've got a common shared purpose and mission, and that's to make a positive impact and to support crew in whatever capacity we can using our skill set.
So having worked for a wealthy family, is that where the idea of yachting came from? Like where did, how did you?
No, oh, but it did trigger with that family though, because I went on leave and I went to South Africa and everyone was talking about yachting. You know how many South Africans are in the industry. And I thought, well, this sounds perfect. I want to travel, but I don't want to come back to Australia with no money. So it all fell into my lap. I knew someone who I went to school with who had a contact for a captain, emailed him, and after breaking my back, jumping off a mountain and doing my SDCW.
Hang on.
At least I did my SDCW 95 before breaking my back.
What were you doing jumping off mountains?
Everyone else was doing it. No, like all my university friends were doing it, and it was in Cape Town in the surrounding mountains. And so you go hiking for a few hours and then you jump off the mountains into pools of water and you go down natural slides made of moss. And a great experience until I saw the third jump and it was 9 meters, 3 stories. And I thought, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? There's only myself and another girl. The rest is guy. They're all guys. And I don't want to ruin the party and say, hey, I'm going to turn around and walk back. So they count me down. And I just jumped off and had no strategy, didn't know that there needed to be a strategy. Apparently, when you jump into pools of water in the mountain region and you don't have waves coming through or anything like that to break your fall, it's effectively landing on concrete. So I landed like this and cracked my L5 vertebra, vertebrae in the spine, and fractured my pelvis. And I got airlifted out. Just shows that you do need travel insurance. It doesn't matter if you're going home or not. I didn't. It's like, I'll be fine. Just going home.
No travel insurance either. Oh, my God.
So that was quite an experience. And then went back to Australia. And, yeah, before I knew it, I flew myself to Ancona to start on a new build.
With a broken back?
Yeah. It was somewhat fused by that stage. I probably should have done more rehab. Yeah. But I didn't receive a contract. They didn't pay for my flights. I was so naive. I arrived at Ancona Airport at midnight and there was no one to pick me up. And I thought, oh, shit, what have I done?
So you're a risk taker. Were you always a risk taker?
I like to say I follow my heart. And my heart was pulling me in that direction. And I think as business owners, using or drawing on your intuition is very powerful as well. So for me, it just felt right to go into yachting.
Your intuition. It's I've been thinking about that actually the other day. Are we intuitive or do we actually learn from said failures? So we were talking about the generations today, and because of everything being plastered all over social media, our 20-year-olds is daring as what we all used to be. Because I think back to my 20s, I'm sure you're probably the same. It's a bit chaotic and there's loads of stuff going on, but no evidence of, you know, very minimal evidence. And I just wonder sometimes whether kids today are, you know, the 20s are when you're meant to mess up and learn that and maybe develop the intuition going, oh, well, you know, I did say yes to that one party and ended up in the middle of nowhere, middle of night. Perhaps that's not a great idea. Perhaps I should get them to pay for my flight to go to somewhere.
Yeah. I guess we got the blinkers on when we're younger. And those failures and life lessons really help to fine-tune that intuition.
Well, that's the business that I'm in, you know, trying to tell women all of the mistakes we've made. So hopefully they won't do it. You know, it's not great, you know.
How did you get into yachting? How did you get in? Yeah.
Mine was really an exciting story. I went to a barbecue with my family. So I was living in New Zealand and I'd come back for a holiday, and a family friend of my parents, so it's like, you know, one of those kind of fake uncles that you have, he worked in the yachting industry, and he was like, what are you doing in New Zealand? I'm like, I don't know, smoking weed, trying to turn into a hobbit. It was like, that was, you know, it was a really lovely lifestyle. Just, you know, I lived in the Southern Alps, so I was just looking at the view every day going, this is amazing. And it was like, it was beautiful. Yeah. Like when you've got a walk to work where it's literally the most incredible view you've ever seen in your life, like going to work and doing a mundane job was like easy, you know, I just kind of skipped along. And he was like, no, but what are you going to do with your life? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm quite happy. So he said, why don't you try yachting? So I did a bit of research. I'm like, yeah, I can serve drinks to rich people on something that floats, you know?
Yeah. So you went to France?
Yeah, yeah. Did my SCCW in Australia, just outside Sydney, and then sat in Sydney on Manly Beach, bumming around, waited for the spring. So, yeah, it's weird how I'd already been traveling for like, I don't know, nearly 7 years by that point. So I just, you know, it was just the idea to get paid and continue to travel was all I was kind of keen on.
Yeah.
So when you got your job, first job on board, what were your first impressions of the job, you know?
I thought it was in a movie. And I thought, someone needs to film what is going on here, because this is surreal. It would make an amazing reality TV show, but I thought it's not possible due to confidentiality reasons. I didn't see it as an option. But you know very well, the things that you see in yachting, next level. So I remember writing emails to friends of updates of what has happened. Oh my goodness, the one was the captain lost control of the vessel and we were out doing the fenders and the Italian painters were saying, jump, jump ship. And I'm like, what's going on? We're heading straight to the dock, full speed.
Oh my God.
I don't know how we stopped, but that was one of the events that I could remember, one of many. Oh, but it's such a long time for me now. I think it's been over 10 years.
Wow.
Like 12 years since I've worked on a vessel. So I feel a bit rusty with my stories, but there certainly are a few.
So like what we can obviously talk about. What was a high for you working on board? Can you remember a moment where you were kind of like wanting to pinch yourself, like, is this actually real?
I loved the Maldives and going surfing and being with the dolphins. But I'd say a big high for me was the connections I made. Like, I've got best friends still today from working on board particular vessels. The sense of adventure. Travel. I don't know if there's one particular high, but I just think the whole nature of yachting and what it can provide. I mean, in terms of my career now, if I didn't go into yachting, I wouldn't have what I have today. And that's a job that I absolutely love. I'm obsessed with my work. And it's a huge problem because I don't know how to rest. I'm like, work is fun, work is love, work is everything. It's my life.
I can actually vouch for that. Like, I've messaged you for like hoping that you'll pick it up in the morning because I know that it's like 2 a.m. in Australia, and you message back. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why are you still away?
I take calls while in labor. Like, I have been in Zoom meetings and 2 hours later I've popped out a baby.
What the hell?
I know. I'm a bit crazy.
You are, like, you know, I do worry about your health sometimes. Like, I'm in awe of your capabilities, but sometimes you're like, maybe take it a little bit easy.
So
she says, rubbing the belly up like number three. Oh, yeah. What was a low? Like, when did the lows kind of, you know, did you have a low point?
And then when did it creep in? The prostitutes on board, and I felt that I had to save them, and I couldn't understand why they were doing what they were doing. And then I don't know if this is true or not, but a crew member explained that in Russia there's actually a school where they teach etiquette, etc., etc., so that you can attract a very wealthy man. And I also heard they do it so that they can pay for their education. And that made me feel so sad. So I would say that would be one of the lows.
Morally, like, I worked on board a vessel, and they brought on ladies of the night. I've actually worked on multiple and I've seen them, but some were really obviously just ladies of the night. And then some were kind of like a mistress. You know, one of the telltale signs of a individual was I didn't realize until I was doing a cabin and her makeup bag. So the madame, because if you work for a madame, their makeup bag, I would die for. You've got stuff like perhaps sometimes so I wouldn't buy. So they could come on with, you know, if they were a mistress, they'd come on with really nice clothes and stuff like that. But the big telltale sign was the makeup bag. I'm like, oh, so you're a rent.
It's like L'Oreal in there. Don't have Yves Saint Laurent.
I know. Also, if you come for money, like, people are cleaning your makeup bag. So Madame's makeup bags were always
pristine.
Everything was nice all the time. And, like, you know, you've got something on the side and you're like, what is that? Because also, obviously, as the job, you know the job. You've got to tidy up and put these things and you put lids on. And if it's spilled, you clean it up and all that kind of jazz. So it does morally, it was one of the challenges for me, especially one group. They were only on, they'd come back late at night and they were young, very young. I was like, if you're 18.
And like 18, at least 18.
At most, you know, like.
That would kill me. So that would kill me. I don't know what I would do.
Well, I didn't say. So they came on and then the next day I'm like, this is not for me. Because the girls wouldn't, you couldn't serve them. They wouldn't look you in the eye. They wouldn't look you in the eye.
What happens if they were trafficked? Like, yeah, the trafficking sex. Oh, my God.
That was in Cannes.
Whoa.
You know, so like that's the darker side of that. I think it's one of those things, you know, they're not, I wouldn't say it's massively, massively common, but there are moments where your moral compass is questioned, you know, what would you tolerate seeing on board? And my tolerance is probably really low, you know, obviously now, you know, the sphere that I work in yourself. I'm probably more outspoken. I was just like, I said the next day, I'm like, nah, you know, they were like, no, it's fine. We'll just get the Filipino to deal with that. And you don't need to be a part of it. And then you can just be around for the normal bits. I'm like, no. Because how do I lay there thinking that kind of stuff? So, yeah. So
do you think crew members should be supported? Like, do you think in the initial stages of their training, they should be warned of what could happen on board? Or do you think in addition to that, there should be therapy, coaching or support to address things such as moral injury?
Mans Beaver. You know her? Amanda Beaver, yeah. A fantastic woman. We've got her on again soon. She's obviously told her story and we're going to continue with what she actually does. She's done a lot of work with trauma, and what understand what trauma is and the processing of. So I think it's a really interesting topic, especially at the moment when now mental health Pandora's box has been opened in the industry. Nobody wants to talk about it and stuff like that. But there's no real guidance on sometimes the structure of the actual yacht, the first port of call, and who wants to take on that mental load. And also working with people's natural thought processes when they want to open up. So I think from my, you know, my limited perspective, I think pursers might be vulnerable to experiencing like people offloading trauma, because I think they're perfect in a lot of ways, because if you're going to them and you're saying, I need to go home, can you arrange me a flight, that kind of starts the conversation, and then you get into the conversation of why you need to go home, and then they just open up to said purser for many reasons. Obviously it's easier to sometimes to talk to women about what's going on with you, but also they can't fire you. And also they're a really good sounding board about whether it, the purser thinks that it should go higher up. So it might be something that's bugging you and, you know, you're really struggling with, but you don't want to go to the captain yet. So I also think pursers are a really good stepping stone to that. But pursers haven't been trained on how to process trauma. You know, obviously the profession that you're in, you spend loads, probably a lot more time than people realizing, trying to understand how you're going to process what you're going to hear and not let that become a part of you and hold you back in your life. And it's the same with any profession that sees, you know, police officers, you know, working in child services and all that kind of stuff. Processing trauma is a massive part of that profession. But if, you know, like I said, if we're set, you know, things are happening on board and everybody's opening up, who they open up to is very, very important. But I think pursers are in a good position to maybe get an upgrade with training. That could be some a key part, but it, as long as they've got the tools to look after themselves. But trauma is something that I think is not really touched upon. If you've not resolved something, you might have seen something absolutely horrific, and that could be somebody in a chain locker getting injured. Do you know what I mean? And it was bloody, and it was, you know, PTSD is a real thing. You know, that is, you know, that is it in its extreme, you know, sense of the word. But you can still be traumatized by it and get on with your life. But the how you deal with that, that might flash up another time, another scenario. And, you know, I suppose it's probably quite advanced to start talking about processing trauma. You've got to have quite a lot of self-awareness in the first place. But a lot of the work that Amanda's done, we will cover it in another episode, it's really interesting. And I think crew members should, you know, when you're dealing with some of the scenarios that obviously happen on board, you know, if you have seen something that's, you know, you might, it may affect you more than you think.
Yes. And at different stages, I had someone text me today because I want my platform to be a voice for crew. And she witnessed a crew member dying on board. And 2 years later, she cannot talk about it without crying.
Trauma, like mental, like psychological scarring is an interesting, you know what mental health is more than anybody else. Like, you know, it's a ever moving feast. We're learning new stuff all of the time, but also the complication that everybody's completely different, because how you deal with trauma has a lot to do with what you've learned to deal with trauma. And then also, you know, where it happened, what it happened. It's really, really complicated, but it's, you know, it's like, one of the things, you know, not to get too personal, I didn't realize how I would feel about having a termination. I didn't realize that when I did have a baby, it would bring all of that back. Because then I had because I didn't realize what I'd actually done. I actually gauged what I'd actually done because I had a child, and that's what, you know, it's, I was very naive, and I think women should be aware of when you do, you know, if you have had that, the realization of what you've actually done, especially when it's a hot topic in this country at the moment. You know, they want to make it possible to terminate pregnancies at 8-9 months. Like, that's the psychological damage that's of actually awful. Doing that is massive, absolutely massive. So, you know, it's a, it, like all things when it comes to women, it's very, very complicated, and you shouldn't underestimate it. You might shout about having the freedom and body autonomy at one point, which, yes, there is lots of arguments from it, but you've still got a realization of that the decision is a terrible, terrible decision. And it takes a lot if you are not, you know, to process. So trauma is a big thing, and I don't think people kind of understand it, but, you know, it goes on. Did you feel when you saw them, what, like when you saw what was going on board, was that like, I kind of don't want to be here? Or was that when it started that you wanted to change things?
The latter, but I can give you an example of my career where I did think that. And it was towards the end of my time working in a prison, and a man of Chinese origin. Have you seen Border Security?
Mm-hmm.
The Australian. So he was caught with drugs. I think it was heroin, maybe. And I had to, he was in custody in hospital, and I had to go and do an assessment. He was chained by his feet and his hands like that. And he looked like a Buddha, like a friendly round Buddha. And your head goes, well, with drugs and trafficking, are the drug lords taking advantage of those who are in dire need of a better life? Who knows? Anyway, the officer told me that I needed to communicate with him, that if he didn't pass stool, because they gave him a whole heap of laxatives, because whatever comes out, they will charge him for. He was holding on for dear life, that his organs were going to blow up. And the next thing, I walked into the room and he exploded. And I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And this poor intern nurse, she's putting on her gloves, and she was saying out loud, I love my job. I love my job. I love my job, just to get through. And I said, I am done. I'd experienced vicarious trauma. I was burnt out. I did move on to another prison, though, but in a different state. That was better than maximum security, that's for sure. More restorative in nature. But one of my values is justice. And I, seeing people treated poorly, I cannot handle. I know he did the right thing. He was a criminal. But
it's really tricky. You know, it's obviously straight trafficking and stuff like that. You can't help but see horrible things, but it's also how you process it. But I think with your journey specifically, you've kind of, you know, like everybody, you know, that's kind of open to it, you just follow where the journey is, and you're most impactful what you've ended up doing now. You know, if we think about when we first knew each other, you know, nobody was really talking about, you know, there was very few of us starting to talk about crew welfare. It wasn't getting any airtime, you know, the illusion that everything's rosy. And let me, like, this is not just a slagging off session about the yachting. It's amazing. It's most of the time, it's fab. But like what we said, if it goes wrong, it generally goes really wrong. Very. There's no in between. Mm. It's not like a little bit wrong.
I agree.
But now, you know, like I said, Pandora's box when it comes to mental health is open, which provides more complications, to be honest, in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's got to happen. So it's generally messy at the beginning. Yeah, a bit like children.
We're moving in the right direction. Yeah. But we are moving in the right direction.
So your exit strategy was to save a bit of money and go back to counselling.
Australia. And then I thought, oh my gosh, no one's going to hire me with my yachting CV. They're not going to get it in the corporate world. So that's when I studied two more degrees. And then part of my counselling degree, I was offered a placement in the prison. And then they ended up offering me a permanent role before finishing my degree. And then the one thing led to the next. So it was an easy transition. When it was offered to me to do my placement there, I thought, this is the last thing I want to do. I do not want to be working with men or adults in a prison. Excuse me. But I did read the book Marching Powder. I don't know if you have, but brilliant book about smuggling drugs. I think in a Bolivia. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's in South America, but anyway, a prison. And they have a community within the prison. The children live there. Everyone lives together, but they're in prison. And yeah, just started reflecting on it. Are you born bad? Nature versus nurture. Anyway, so exit strategy was the question, was it?
Yeah. So how did your thing come back up again?
Good question. I was thinking how I could best apply my skill set. And I did like the idea of starting my own business, the idea of freedom, working wherever in the world, you know, so the same values of yachting came through. And the strangest thing happened. I was at the airport, submitted my final assessment for my business degree, flying to Lucca, Italy for my grandmother's 80th birthday. Then I was going to Antibes to meet the crew coach and sent her a Facebook message. And she said, I don't live here anymore. I'm in Melbourne. And I flew out of Melbourne. I was living in Melbourne at the time. And I thought, that's ironic. And I was sitting, do you know Monaco, like when you go towards the museum around the bay? Like I was sitting there on the dock, and again, the intuition, the calling, I was like, I'm going to do something here in this industry. I know it. And I flew home, and my intuition told me, pick up the phone and call the crew coach just to see where she's at. And the internal dialogue was, but what are you going to say, Corinne? What's the point? the other side of me was like, just do it and see what happens. So I did it. And she's like, I'm looking to sell my business. You've got a weekend to decide whether you want it or not.
Wow.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure. I had no idea about, you know, doing due diligence and checking the financials. I've learned so much since running a business. But, I took up that opportunity, then moved to Perth, lived under my father's roof for a year and felt like I was doggy paddling goddamn hard just to get my head above water, as I felt overwhelmed by all the aspects of running a business.
Yeah. It's weird how, well, opportunities fall into your lap, I suppose, don't they? It's quite interesting. So what were your take, obviously your time on board, what do you think your biggest takeaway has been that you've applied to your life? You know, because it is, in some respects, you get institutionalized on board. Did it change anything of you or have you taken something from it and adapted it?
I think,
it's always been, you know, you've got it now forever.
I think it's helped me become a better entrepreneur. I'm not afraid of hard work, and the consistency and persistency that we have and the resilience as crew members, I've certainly taken on board. And I think that has helped me get my business to where it is today.
You do need resilience when it comes to business. I mean, not being federating.
All sorts of curveballs, but yeah.
My favorite word is pivot. You have to keep going. But also in the sphere that you work in, there's a lot of change. We've experienced a lot of change since you started, and also it's continuing to change now. I don't think it's going to settle down anytime soon. So that resilience is going to be handy for a little bit longer.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, we need it.
So what was the industry like when you first started? Was it receptive? How was you?
We never spoke about mental health. It wasn't a topic of conversation.
So when you were trying to talk to people about it, were they even interested? Like, we're all fine.
I found myself in a position, this is when I was a second stew, in the middle between the chief and the other girls as a mediator and support person. And I also had the captain saying, Corinne, how do I handle the situation? What do I do? And I guess that is where I thrived, because it's using my skill set. I think I make a terrible waitress. But that's where I really enjoyed that aspect, helping and being a support person to my fellow crew members more than anything else. But it wasn't from the angle of, I'd never diagnose anyone or anything like that. Or I think it's just a natural skill that I've had since I was a little girl. I found my parents' friends opening up about their marriages, and I just thought, oh, that's a bit weird. Why are they telling me so much information? I'm like 12. But yeah, it's natural. But mental health, no, wasn't discussed. I thought it was so weird that there was a lack of leadership skills and lack of training. And after doing my research 10 years later and realizing that hasn't changed very much, that's very unusual. Mm-hmm. But I think our industry has always been 10 years behind. I'm hoping that we're catching up now.
Well, it's not really had they're only just starting to talk about like kind of proper HR and contracts. And, you know, the thing is, it is a difficult, because it spans so many different jurisdictions and all that kind of stuff, it's very hard to put a framework in when, you know, everybody's kind of everywhere. So that's the kind of excuse I give why it is, you know, the reasoning why it is probably so far behind. When you started obviously working in the crew coach, you know, what were you doing and how is it? What were you initially kind of support wise offering, and how has it changed and what you're doing now?
I was doing CVs, and my first client was someone who did my exit strategy course, and that's actually going to be relaunched soon. I was also trying to write, it took me 3 years to write the advanced leadership course. I launched the foundational last year. Now I've set up an HR support for yacht management companies and captains, and that's doing really well. And of course I do counseling, and I've got the guest yacht crew wellbeing course that we offer. And a venture capitalist, when I started in 2018, he advised me, said, Corinne, just do one thing and do it well. I did listen. Couldn't help myself. I'm like, problems. I need to find the solutions. But it worked out well for me, because it's like the seasons. It's counseling will go up and then it will drop a bit. And then, you know, everyone's finished the season and now they can do the leadership course. So it varies, and it's all worked out. So I'm very happy with that. But we have transformed slowly, I would say, over the years. It hasn't been fast, because I really am about program integrity. I'm not about flipping out a course in 2 weeks and then trying to, sell it to the masses. It's not what we stand for. Mm-hmm.
How has it been working from Australia? You know, because it's, you know, are yachts in Australia, but there's, you know, your main client base is not.
I don't have any clients in Australia. Not one. But I started this business before COVID, and obviously with COVID, it's only strengthened what I have because all our services are online. So it hasn't presented to be an issue, except flying to yacht shows. That's a bit of a pain in the bum.
Well, it is. So I mean, far. Like I said, the time difference must kill you sometimes, you know, like the hours that you can actually work and contact people might be a bit restrictive. Mm. But you obviously, life goes on as well. You know, you've created an amazing home for yourself. You know, she's, you know, amazing crew coach and then a farmer's wife as well.
Yeah, what a perfect combination.
Perfect combination. No, it's, you know, I'm sure you've got bags of time to spare to do self-care.
So, yeah, and for my veggie garden and baking and all those things that a farmer's wife should be doing.
I really just don't know where you sleep. When do you sleep ever?
We've only just started sleeping. It's the kids that keep me awake more than anything. I'm very efficient. That's my superpower.
You're very efficient. You can get stuff done. So obviously we're all about the female experience here on the podcast. After obviously you've spoken to, I imagine, hundreds of women and their past experiences and previous, is it getting better for women out there on board?
In what way specifically?
Oh, it could be general mental health. Are they looking after themselves? Are they safer on board? Like, what's, because, you know, nobody was remotely interested on whether I was, you know, functioning at optimal capacity or whether my nutritional intake was good, or I think hours of rest. I don't even know what year that came in, but it wasn't really a thing.
No, they're still fudging it.
Mm.
Some, I can't, yeah. Can only speak for some, not everyone, but I can see that there are certain yacht management companies that are, let's say, being more innovative in their approach and taking a stance. I cannot stand virtue signaling and saying, "Oh yeah, we support mental health," and then don't do anything about it. I think it's great that we have Yacht Career Help and iSwan. But don't see that as a one-stop shop. You need to be doing a lot more than just signposting to a hotline. So it's looking at crew well-being, you know, crew development, education, mental health support. There's so many different aspects that can help and support crew.
The Yacht Crew Helpline is a crisis line. You're not meant to call it until breaking point, you know, that's what they've designed it for, you know, it's the safety net. So that's the last resort, that's not the first.
So I think there's a misunderstanding. Yeah,
it really is, you know, it's if everything else fails. And that's why like, obviously with crew on board, you know, anybody listening to our podcast, you know, your crew insurance, you know, you should be able to access it. It does provide a lot, but people don't even know whether they can or should. That's before they get to whether they, you know, there's gatekeepers to it. You know, it's the Yacht Crew Helpline is insanely valuable and it's still probably not being utilised the way it should be, but it's not the first, I would argue, it's not the first port of call. That's the last resort. That's the final safety net when everything else is kind of falling away.
Yeah, so we still, there's a lot more that can be done. And again, we can't do this in isolation. We need the whole industry's support in order to put this infrastructure into place.
Yeah. I always, one of the things that, especially recently, I've been thinking about captains. And captains get asked to kind of probably cover quite a lot, you know, within their role. You know, it is morphing and changing, and the boats are getting bigger, and that's even more staff. Do you know what I mean? That's the role that, you know, if you staff in the traditional sense, you know, you're on your 25 meter and then you're going all the way up and now you're a captain of a 150 meter, those jobs are not the same. They're not the same. And it's like, I wonder now that there is more, it's not even like, is mental health training even recommended by anybody? Do you know what I mean? Like with the regulators, flag state, are they like, why don't you do, you know, some of these courses because, you know, it might be, a, it might be helpful.
It's a good point though. I don't know about flag state, whether it's something they would recommend or push or advocate for. But I hear you in terms of the captain's role. I feel for captains because I think there is a lot of responsibility put on their plates and they're expected to do it all and to have all the answers, and it's impossible. They're only trained in a very niche area. They're not trained in HR. They're not trained in leadership. Leadership's not even mandatory. They're not trained in mental health, not mandatory. So that's a lot for them to deal with, and there's a high expectation for them to perform, and I think that's really unfair.
Well, the thing is, you know, it all starts, you know, I mean, I kind of start from the bottom up, but if you were to try and create change, you've kind of got to guide the ones at the top, you know, like your role is going to expand when you go onto your 70 meter, and you're going to end up with a whole bunch of additional responsibilities that, you know, you don't need to get offensive about it, but presuming most guys have not, you know, that's not what they started sailing for, is to do HR and mental health training. They just wanted to be, you know, drinking rosé, taking the boat to Capri, you know, the fun stuff. Do you think we are heading towards a point where it should be mandatory? Do you 100%. Think they will do it? They'll have to do it.
I think so. Given the events that have occurred over the past few years, I don't think the industry has a choice. I think they have to. We need to professionalize the industry. It's not, we call it professional, but it's not professional.
No, but it was also, there needs to be, I think, a realism about what the, you know, it's like all females that work on in the interior want to be a purser. Well, that job's completely different to what you would start off doing, especially on big boats. You know, that becomes an admin role. And like I said, there is scope to make it even more professional, you know, make it even, you know, get better qualifications for it. But you're also, you might want to be a purser, but then if you can't, like I said, I think you should have mandatory mental health training for pursers, because naturally I think they're probably one of the ones that you go to first. Might not, no, hearing people's woes is not for everybody. Some people are really good.
But then we also can't pigeonhole pursers to be, you know, that mental health support or first aider.
I agree with you, but I think that's, you know, that's one of my fears. I think people just, you know, it's a girl thing to do. Mental health, talking about feelings. Do you know what I mean? That the stereotypical, you know, women talk about emotions better, you know, and it might just, without the right framework and support, I think it could be a bit dangerous if we kind of just assume that, oh, Chief Stew's going to take on the mental load of the entire boat with no training. And then they wonder why she's kind of burnt out and a bit hormonal. A lot of responsibility to be the mum of the boat. What are, like, could you name a couple of key positive changes you're seeing right now which fill you with hope when it comes to the mental health sphere?
It's certainly the younger generation coming through us speaking up about mental health. They're not afraid to do so. I am seeing changes shore-based, having recently had a few conversations with a select few yacht management companies and hearing what they are putting into place. In light of Paige's death, there have been, in the last 2 days, two companies that now want to do criminal history checks for their crew. Whereas how on earth that is not a, it's not a mandatory point in the MLC, I do not know. How's that left out?
How could you be a criminal and have a captain status? Do you understand what I mean? Like, that's a massive moment of responsibility. And like so we've done an episode with Comrade talking about crew pass.
Oh,
and
I've been really proud.
It's been released in a few weeks. But I was kind of a bit skeptical at the beginning too. Like, I'll be really honest with you. Like, I was like, it's just a gimmick because the only people that will apply to get it are the ones that are desperate for jobs. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
In how it starts is that. Okay. Because they'll do anything to get ahead. If they've got that, it might work. They might get picked first. Okay. But with reflecting on that and what I was thinking about that, it has to start somewhere. And if it's the young that are all criminal checked, great. And then you get into the argument, do women need to be criminally checked? On average, no. It's a complete waste of time checking women because even if they do come up with something, it's generally something like possession of drugs. It's generally not anything violent or anything like that. So you can use theft, possession at worst.
Mm.
So do women need to do it? No. Do youth need to do it? No. But is life fair? No. Do we have to start somewhere to start building a bit of a filter? So if all the women are doing it, even though they know that they don't really need to, because you don't technically need to get it to get a job at this moment in time, and the likelihood is you're not a criminal. But if we all start doing it, I can't see any other way of filtering out some of the bad people that don't deserve to be in the industry.
And you know, it only takes a few to pollute the industry and have an effect on many, many, many crew members because they just hop from one boat to the next.
Mm. Yeah. Like the damage and the ripple effect that they can actually have is massive. Now, is it foolproof? Mm. No. Criminal checks need to be updated all the time. But there is enough money for recruitment agents to absorb that cost, for sure. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Criminal checks cost like 300. I think for the international one, it's like 300 euros or whatever.
I was going to ask about that in terms of international versus your home country.
Yeah, so crew pass do a full, you know, the most comprehensive check you can do. You know, but it, again, it's only a flash image of, you know, from that moment and past. But if you're working on a vessel and you're with a multimillionaire and you're around his kids all the time and you're getting them in and out of water and all of this kind of stuff, the nanny that's on board will have had a security check. All of their personal staff that might be on board would have had security checks. So why on board is that not also a requirement? You are in personal vicinity. You are close quarters.
You know what I wonder? I think the owners just assume that it's done.
Well, I know that some boats, especially the higher profile ones, they do their own. So when somebody gets a job, they take control and, you know, they do it from there because that individual, they have their own security services. But I think recruitment agents have a massive responsibility to kind of do this. You can't charge clients these fees and then put forward candidates that are a danger to other crew members or potentially a danger to other crew members. And the owners might, you know, could be. I just don't understand. Every job, like there's so many industries on land where it's a thing. If you want to work in a bank, you have
to. I've got to do it. Every year.
Yeah. If you want to work with children, if you want to work in the health service, if you want to work for the council. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a big thing. It's not much, to be honest. And yeah, the world is not fair because women have to do it and technically. But if we guilt them all into doing it, it's a start. You know, it's a step in the right direction. I can't see anything changing otherwise. So, yeah, that's a positive, hopefully, on the horizon. two questions to finish off. If you were talking to Corinne, who landed ready to pick up her first boat in the middle of the night, what would your three bits of advice be to her? Maybe get a contract. I don't know.
True.
What would it be? New crew. What are we saying to them? If you're ironing in the laundry right now, what is Corinne's pearls of wisdom?
I think I want to say my mum saved me by telling me that she saw the movie Taken. Now, I haven't watched it. I don't like watching scary movies. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. It's a thriller. It's not, well, I suppose if you've got a daughter, it's probably, I haven't watched it since having my daughter. I'd probably watch it. Okay. It would feel a bit different.
But I think that saved my life. So I haven't watched it, but she said, oh my gosh, I've watched this movie. Be careful. And I'm like, oh, mom, I'm going to be fine. And my first or second week in Arcona, I was walking to the beach. It might've been a 5 kilometer walk. I was followed by two men. And again, intuition told me to turn around. I looked and I was like, okay, I know who's behind me. 5 minutes later, looked again, the same men. And they followed me all the way to the beach. And I thought, they didn't look like they're going to the beach, but they're very unusual. I put my towel down and then I looked up because what are those things called in Italy where you've those lookouts? It feels like a semi balcony and then you've got all the steps, the rocks that people turn on. So yeah. I put my towel on one of those steps and I looked up and the guy did a nod to his friend like that, like, let's go. And I thought, holy shit, I need to get out of here. I packed up my things and I walked past them and I walked so fast and tried to speak to an Italian policeman who couldn't speak English. So then I hid in a cafe and I saw them looking for me, called the chief officer to come pick me up. So if my mum didn't tell me that, I think I would be very ignorant about my well-being and safety.
Should watch
so it. I think just be aware.
More than
the
ever.
The other
now.
Thing, yes, but the other thing is your personal brand, because that can stick. So when I was in Antibes for the yacht show in 2018, I was sitting at the Hop Store, love people watching. So it's exactly what I was doing, but seeing crew off their face, I was like, that is not a good look. If you go dock walking tomorrow and you're looking for a job with me, I'd say see you later. So your personal brand counts whether you're on board or you're off. It's your reputation.
It is. It's really, that's why we came up with alter ego names. So this was before people were taking too many photos.
That's so
me
funny.
And my friends, when it was all getting a little bit wild, we'd call each other, we had drunk names for each other. So we'd call each other by our drunk names. So we wouldn't say our actual names.
My friend calls herself Dark Vader.
So yeah, guys, you know, obviously when you're, it's a bit hard not to get wasted in the Hop Store, really. I mean, it was never my favorite place. It smells funky in there. The smell's not changed. Like, there's just something in there. It's just like a mixture of bleach, vomit, and
yeah, that's true.
Just like a lot of fruit flies in there all the time. It just so I was more of a drinkers club kind of girl. I like to sit outside and but yeah, alter ego names, you know, personal branded. So the kids today can't get away with anything anyway, without it being recorded. But yeah, back in the day it was different names when
so
if you're gonna shout your friend down the road, it wasn't actually their name, it was their other name.
Dark Vader. Come back here.
The night's turned, so therefore we have to use our other names. Not that it probably, if you were still walking past the captain, they'd still know who the hell you were, but you know, in our heads it made us feel better.
That's certainly one strategy.
To finish off, we always ask about a crazy story. What's your wackiest story from being on board? Is it going to be fun?
So disappointing.
We've had quite interesting. You're going to be way out of an NDA, so like, I won't worry about that.
Crazy story. I'm sure you've heard really crazy stories. I feel like I don't have much to offer, but seeing dried sardines, like tucked between the skirting of the bed and the mattress.
What?
That was weird. Yeah.
Dried Russian. Sardines.
Yeah, Russian guess. It must be a little midnight snack.
It fell down the side.
No, it didn't fall. Like, there was heaps of it.
What, they put them there?
Yeah.
God, so weird. Just so weird.
So weird. And then also, all our Kerastase products had disappeared. And so we had to check the luggage, the guest luggage, and there they all were stuffed in the back to take home.
Oh, no.
And this was like, yeah, it was, they didn't pay for the charter. So it's not like they're thinking they're getting their money's worth by getting all the condiments, etc.
I'm not one of those people, you know, like some people go to hotels and then they'll take all of the little miniatures and stuff like that. Like, I don't. Why do you want them? But fish in the bed.
A fish in the bed. And then the other one, which was, you say that's pretty crazy, but we're in the Maldives and the guests must have thought dolphins are just fish, and they wanted to go hunt all the dolphins and kill the dolphins. And then they also had no respect for the marine reserve, and they went on the jet skis, smashed into the coral, and then had to walk onto the private beach, and then security got them, and they just said, boat will fix it, don't worry about it. Like, disrespectful. Again, like, made lack of education.
Lack of education, well, entitlement. Maybe the worst combination of the two, you know? Worst combination of the two. It's been lovely talking to you. Look, we've completed one. No glitches.
Although
I'm recording, there'll probably be some gremlin in there. We've made it.
Yay, thank you.
But I would like to get you back on. We'll perhaps pick a topic and go a bit more in depth with it, in regards to especially female crew on board, where things are heading. I think it'd be really interesting.
Sounds good. Hit me up.
I will hit you up. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Cherise. Lots of love to you.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, there are loads more for you to enjoy. And we've got some absolute amazing episodes that are going to come out very shortly. So stay tuned. But until next time, stay safe on board and enjoy yourself. And also think of a drunk alter ego name.